You have 17 voice messages. First voice message.
What's going on, dude? You son of a bitch.
You can't stop it.
I gotta say that today.
End of message.
I got a big plan. Big idea, bro. Big idea.
Message erased. Next message.
We're still here. Enjoy it.
It's ODG, Occupy Dave and Giggles.
End of message. Next message.
Seriously, guys, Fort.
You know we do a radio show, right?
I just want to say that we never claim to be a comedy show. We just entertain.
You son of a bitch. I'm freaking out. Freaking out. You look so good right now.
Give me a chance you want to leave.
Dave and Giggles. Dave and Giggles.
Got to go big. Really big.
Message erased.
You can't get any fresher than your own vegetable garden. Or can you? Right now at the Home Depot, 1 gallon Bonnie.
Bear with us. Giggles, where are you? He's gone, man. He's just gone. We're going to play a little song first because we got a 3-hour show to go. So we're gonna fill in the time a little bit. And as soon as this stupid commercial is done, we're going to get rolling. And there. Comes. There we All right, there it is. So, Giggles, you there? What's going on, buddy? Oh, geez, I got to turn you up. It would have been good to turn you up. There you are.
There he is.
There you are.
There I am. There
Sound I am. Good. What's going on?
I'm just hanging. You getting any like feedback on your end? Or
no, it sounds good over here. Why, you getting some feedback? I love on-air talk. Production talk.
I'm just hearing like some hissing. And I don't know if it's my gear. Or your gear.
It might be. I know that they one of the music cables here is fucked up, so it might be that. But everything sounds fine over here. So we'll just go with it, you know?
We'll go with it.
We got some people in studio today because I figured we had a 3-hour show. Might as well bring some people in. So you remember our good buddy John? John's here.
John who?
John the Grizz.
Oh, Grizz. Grizz is in. You got Grizz in there?
Yeah, Grizz is here.
All right. Tell me more.
There we go.
Let's get some levels here. Yeah. And then we also got my roommate. Now he wants to be called Bruce.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. Listen to that voice.
He's got a good voice for radio. Yeah, he really does.
He's here to smooth things out.
He is. He's really smoothing things out. Yeah.
I'm going to referee the session.
Yeah. Referee the session. So, yeah. He's going to be our fact checker. Yeah, that's what he wants to do.
No funny stuff.
John and Bruce in studio. John sounds Bruce. So good.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to maintain the Bruce thing, but I'll try.
We'll
see how it goes.
I have faith in you.
Yeah. We have an interesting show lined up. I tried to call you before to let you know what I have lined up, but
Tell me now.
All right. So in like a half an hour, we're going to get a call from a professor, a doctor from Montclair University. He is a marine biologist.
Ooh.
He's not listening to me at all. Are you there? You're freaking out over there.
I'm listening. There's like a hiss. Like I'm hearing other radio stations or something.
That's weird.
Like I'm getting some other interference.
Is that
I
sound all right?
I think because I got so many wires down here that something's
you
happening.
You should turn the radio down.
I should probably turn the radio down. I can't help you with your hiss. You're just going to fiddle around for a while.
I'm going to fiddle for a while.
He's befiddled.
He's befuddled and befiddled.
So you got a marine biologist.
Marine biologist, yeah. So earlier in the week, I was like, oh, shit, we have 3-hour show, and we need to fill some time. So I put out a blast on Reddit on the environmental site, and someone responded and said, hey, you should get in touch with my professor. He'll totally do it. And he wants to come on. He wants to talk a little bit about the Paris Agreement, a little bit about climate change, and a little bit about marine biology.
What's his name?
His name is Dr. Paul. I have it written down here. Dr. Paul Bologna.
Like Bologna?
What was that?
Yeah, Bologna. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I haven't talked to him yet, so we're going to find out. Dr. Paul Bologna.
Is there room for him?
Yeah.
Is there room for him in the studio? Or?
No, he's not coming in. He's going to call. He's going to call.
Oh, he's calling.
Yeah. So there's that. Then later on, since we have a long show.
He's coming to your house.
He's coming. He's coming to Colorado. Eagles. He's actually in Colorado.
He's at your front door.
He's at your front door. And then later on, I have a friend who I went to high school with who's going to call in. She is a
friend? What kind of friend?
She's a friend who I graduated with. And like, you know, you follow on Facebook. You see what's up.
You follow along.
Yeah, I don't think you know her.
What's her name?
Her name is Courtney Williams.
No, I've heard you talk about Courtney.
Yeah, Courtney, she went to Yale when she was college, and I don't know what happened to her after, but she's pretty much a scientist, and I believe is like on the cure, like on the bandwagon of trying to find the cure for cancer.
Nice.
Like that's her.
That's neat.
And then she's also a really big spokesperson
That's a good wagon to be on.
Yeah, it's a good wagon to be on.
It's not a wagon you want to get off of.
You should stay on that wagon. And then also she is a huge voice and activist for Indian Point.
Oh.
Yeah. So I know you did. I know. I figured that would be a good little summation for you. Yeah. But she's been on like CNN talking about Indian Point and stuff. So she's got a lot of
a scientific show lined up here.
Yeah. Like a very scientific show. And then speaking of, we have a doctor of science ourselves.
I play a scientist every day.
You play a scientist every day of the week. And we also have the king of science, Bruce. The fact checker.
Bruce. Just to cut in here.
Well, I got to say, Bruce.
Yeah, you got to say what?
Bruce, your handiwork, your woodwork is exceptional. You know, I see your woodwork all over the apartment.
I'm kind of a doctor of wood.
Yeah. Doctor of wood.
He's a wood scientist.
Yeah. Kind of a wood doctor.
A wood doctor.
I've been told that before.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about Bruce is like, if you just like mention, be like, hey, we should use some like shelves here. He'll be like, I'm on it. I am on it. Like the kid right loves... Loves a good project. I don't think I've ever met someone who loves a project as much as you do.
I do love a good project.
Yeah.
Living in Brooklyn, where do you get your wood from? Home Depot?
I usually make my own wood.
Oh, nice.
You made me spit take a little bit. That's good.
That's why there's so many short trees near your house right now. I noticed it when I was parking today.
What is Indian Point?
Indian Point is the...
For the listeners that might not be as educated.
Well, John probably couldn't. He lived by it. So
it's
probably...
a nuclear power plant located in Westchester, New York, right on the Hudson River.
And they recently announced that they were going to close it.
Ah.
And there's a lot of like stipulations in that closing and stuff.
Because we're going to burn some more coal because we have all that coal.
Because we have all the coal, right? We need to bring coal back. Yeah. That's what we need to do. Giggles, you there? What happened? Right, you went off?
Listen, there's just a hiss. As long as it's not coming out on your end.
I don't hear
it. You guys don't hear it. It's fine. I'm just hearing it. I can hear you guys. Try everybody's a little low. But we're just going to rock through it. We're going to rock through it. I'll try to fix it up.
So what's going on over there? I haven't talked to you in a couple of days. You've been busy, I'd imagine. You've got things going on. What's happening?
Like, well, we saw each other last week.
We did. It was such a brief... It's so funny. You come here like every other week now, and I feel like you just want to move back to New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now it's hip. The neighborhood's hip. Like, New York is... There's so much going on there now. Like, the places that weren't hip are hip now.
Wait, when were you in New York when nothing was going on?
Well, he lived in our apartment before, like, how many years ago? When did you move out of the apartment? That was a while ago.
Yeah. 2009. I think I lived there 2008, 2009. I might live there a couple years.
That apartment's been a hall of fame for your crew, Dave.
Like, yeah. Well, I mean,
everybody's lived there at one point.
Yeah, it's kind of like a rotating door. It's been dubbed many a times.
When was the first lease by Andy? This is going on what?
Oh, he must have moved in there. Like, when do you think Andy moved in there? 2007? Maybe 2006?
No, he was there like 2006.
2006,
yeah.
I think.
So yeah, 2006, 2007. Because he was there, you know, way back when.
Right.
You know?
Right. And Ridgewood was nothing back then. And now you come there and you're excited to be there.
Dude, I get the Norma's, you know, biscuit sandwich every time I go there. You know, it's a sandwich, bacon, eggs, and cheese on a like a buttermilk biscuit, and it's beautiful. It's $5 and it's just so handcrafted and it's so well done.
It is.
That like it's worth going there for it.
We're sponsored by Norma's.
We're sponsored by
Norma's. Today's show is sponsored by Norma's Biscuits.
It is. Go to Norma's. They're great. They also have a sign there that says good food takes a while because they don't have things like ready to go. They have to like they pre-make everything, which isn't that what you want in a little corner deli or a corner coffee shop?
Pre-making or they make it on the spot?
They make it on the spot.
That's not pre-making.
They make everything. They, just like Chris makes his own wood, or Bruce makes his own wood.
Thanks.
Yeah, I try. So what's going on over there? I saw you put up a bunch of pictures of this new endeavor that you're doing.
Ooh.
This kid's school.
Talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
What's my new endeavor? What am I doing?
You're doing those videos for the school.
Doing? Oh, hey, well, what are you doing?
My kid's school. Yeah. So I was, you know... I want to help out the school. I'm basically going to get a tax write-off, I think, you know, because I'll value the work. And
how do you
it,
know?
And
did you investigate this?
So, you know, it'll be like, you know, I'm not doing it totally, you know, out of the goodness of my own heart. There are, you know, selfish benefits to it. But I think it's going
to
be great.
Did you have children just to have a tax write-off?
Yeah, I think so.
We're going to do the video in English first, and then we're going to do it in Spanish. So I've never edited Spanish content.
What's happening?
And the footage
there?
Is beautiful. Like my kid goes to a Montessori school, so all the kids are just like working independently. There's a lot of color. There's just a lot of like relaxed environment. You know,
okay.
Like I kind of dig it. I'm like, man, I wish I kind of went to a Montessori school because like I feel like I could have, you know, maybe done something a little bit different.
The difference of public schools to Montessori schools? Give us a rundown of like, do you pay more or what's the deal with it?
Money.
No, so like so Montessori philosophy is just kind of like letting the kid like once you teach a kid a lesson, you know, on something, it's like life skills. You let the kid pick what he wants to work on.
But
so
how old
like,
is
oh,
he?
I feel like doing some math, or I feel like doing some science, or I feel like doing some writing. Like the kid gets to choose, you know, and they do it for like 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, and they change. You know, like there's no like beating the book of this is what you need to learn. It's kind of like all at the same pace.
But I guess you're getting down the road of being like, okay, you can let the kid pick what they're going to do. But your son is what? He's five?
Four.
He's four. Does a kid who's 4 years old really know, like can he really set parameters for himself to learn and better himself?
Probably.
Or does he need
a
school?
Like, I think the teachers kind of guide him. That's why they're there. I mean, they're not just like the teachers aren't out smoking cigarettes while the kids are just playing around with
That would be pretty. That would be a good school.
You know, they're guiding them.
You're mistaking that with public school.
Oh, that's public school, right? But I mean, all right. So say he wants. Do they give him set parameters to be like, okay, this is what you could do. You could do this, this, or this, or is it just like you got to choose what you want
to
do?
There's like choices. You go there. There's like a ton of choices to, and they can only do the works that they've had like a lesson on. So, all
right. And then your kid's really into Spanish. He loves Spanish, right?
Well, I don't know if he loves it, but like he's soaking it up, you know. Like the teachers there speak to him a lot in slow Spanish,
slow Spanish,
and they try You know, they try to like be very calm. They're not just like throwing, you know, Spanish at him. You know, they're explaining everything. So like, you know, and they're sponges at that age. So I think they're really like soaking it in.
Sure.
And I think he understands a lot more than we think he does. So, which is pretty cool.
That's good. So you're going to go down there.
My goal is in a year, I want to be like completely bilingual. I need to like study.
You?
I think I need to speak more of it. You know,
have you taken any classes? What's the deal?
No, I mean, I just kind of speak it, you know, to the kids and, you know, listen to Spanish radio.
Dave and Giggles might be bilingual.
Davide and Giggles. We got to learn out Chris, fact check. What is Giggles in Spanish?
Gigales.
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 David and Gigales show.
Gigolo.
Do you know anything about the philosophies of Rudolf Steiner?
I think he's talking to you, Giggles.
Giggles.
He's talking the philosophies of Rudolf. No. What is it?
He was the founder of Waldorf schools. He sort of invented the philosophy that Waldorfian schools are based on.
And is Waldorf the same as the Montessori kind of curriculum?
No, it's a little different. That's why I thought maybe there was some expertise, but he also invented biodynamic gardening and a whole kind of architecture with no.
You've been reading about this a lot lately, right?
Well, I visited. He has like a center in the foothills of Switzerland. It's like this amazing, huge sort of castle-looking church that's made out of completely made out of poured cement. And a bunch of stained glass.
Is it old, or is it like,
so,
did he do it?
So that he did it. Him and an architect sort of invented it using his, like, this invented architecture and mathematics. And the first one was made out of wood. And then in New Year's Eve, 1912, I believe, the townspeople came and burned it down because they thought that they were practicing witchcraft.
That makes sense.
And so he built it again a year later and out of cement.
And he's like, screw you guys, you're not burning this one down.
Yeah, yeah. And he was like, we're not.
Natural. It's way more natural.
He's like, we're not. This isn't witchcraft. This is like mysticism.
So he wasn't like, this isn't like science or math. This is mysticism.
Well, it's like science and math and some mysticism mixed in and the study of color and energies. And.
But he came up with a whole like gardening type
tons of stuff. Psychology, movement, eurythmia is like this. There's. So I think that your kids are probably learning eurythmia, which is an alphabet of the body.
Is this true? He's like knee deep in like wires. I'm staring at him.
Oh, you have video of him over there.
I have video of him over there. Yeah, he's all over the place.
Now, I'm moving up. I'm gonna go upstairs and see if I can get a better signal, because it's just hard to hear like John.
Who's
and,
maybe we should get your son on the line and talk to him.
Yeah, we should get Leo
about,
on there.
About what he's learning. What are they? What
he's
is your boy
could,
being
we
indoctrinated?
We could bring him on later.
We can ask him, Leo, what subject did you choose to study?
What do you feel like learning right now?
Exactly.
And then we'll just go down that road.
What if a kid's like, oh, I'd like to study the art of eating crayons?
I mean, that was
that
my
age,
question.
Yeah, like,
that was my question. Do they give him options, or is it just like he could do whatever he wants? Because,
yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have learned anything. I didn't learn anything. But if I was like choosing my own thing, I would have been like, I want to play with that truck.
But maybe
that's what I want to do.
But maybe they see like you know, kids playing with trucks and like, all right, he should be a truck driver.
He should be a truck
driver.
He's
let's
not
going to
do much
about
in
truck
life.
Driving.
Well, let's make him a truck driver.
And then the kid who's building the Legos for the truck to drive into, they're like, all right, let's send him to engineering school.
Yeah, right. So it's like how you go about it. Yeah,
making tomorrow's engineers and truck drivers.
But I guess it all comes down to like how the teachers are. Because if they're like really smart and they can figure out how to guide kids and like, oh, he wants to play with the truck. Let's teach him how like that truck is made. Let's teach him about how this, you know, axles and all that stuff and that sort of thing. But my guess is it's probably not. I don't know. I don't know anything about Montessori schools.
I, that's the thing. I think we think too little of children. They're actually wired to learn. They're just sponges. Like you said. So they're so if you put a bunch of things in front of them, a bunch of interesting projects, they're gonna pick one and start doing it. So it's just the idea of like putting a bunch of options, whatever one they gravitate to, then you kind of like keep on pushing that one, and you don't force them. You're not like, nope, that time's over. Now you have to do math or whatever.
Right. Which is pretty much
doing math.
Sports.
You're like, yeah, now you have to read some Shakespeare.
All right.
You know?
Or this kid is you know really into showing everybody their underwear. So let's rename her Destiny and send her to the strip club.
Yeah, I mean let's
peg him at a young age. We know.
Yeah,
what
peg him at a young age. All right, I'm into that. Yeah. All right, so if you were going to
if we took
the Montessori school idea and put it towards like adults, and you could choose anything to be interested in that you would want to go into that you don't know anything about, what would you want to choose, Bruce? I'm looking at you.
Oh, yeah. I think I might be a wildlife biologist.
A wildlife biologist?
Yeah, I think I'd like to swim with the dolphins and study like some poisonous frogs and snakes. And
just go down to like
in the
South
jungle.
America.
Yeah, just camping out underneath the stars. And like, maybe, and I feel like archaeology would be pretty cool. Like dig up old fossils.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean,
something else, maybe something like, far away from New York. Now I'm saying it, I'm realizing like something way
far from
nothing
here.
To do with the city.
Right. I think the thing about the archaeology, everyone wanted to be an archaeologist because of Indiana
Park?
Jones.
Oh, Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones really made that look cool.
Oh, yeah.
But the funny thing is that we know someone, Ryan. He went into archaeology and
of Indiana Jones.
Basically. And he was like, this is really boring. This is like not as exciting as I thought it would have been.
Yeah, I think the science is incredibly important.
Yeah. Science is very important.
Just say that stipulation.
You can be an archaeologist,
but,
you don't even have to have a degree. You can go out and start digging for stuff.
You know, if you think you're going to find some bones or something.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, you can go dig. You don't need a degree in archaeology to go out digging.
You know, actually, the one of the biggest fossil beds for dinosaurs is in Jersey, and it was like one of the largest finds in the entire world, and now it's a Walmart parking lot.
That's good. That's a Simpsons episode.
Sounds
actually.
About right.
Yeah.
There was actually a. You could do stuff in New York and find some stuff. There was in Ridgewood, which was like two or three blocks from us, maybe like 5 years ago. There was a Con Ed came in and they were digging, and as they were digging,
found some bones.
They found like six bodies buried and all their skeletal remains. And it turned out it was like some like serial killer or something along those lines, or like some mafia dude that just buried them in their backyard.
Oh, wow. Did they identify them?
I can't remember the whole story, but I remember it was a big deal when it happened.
Well, you got to figure that if you really looked underground in Manhattan, the amount of dead bodies that are down there in various levels from different eras of the city, there's got to be tons.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I know that there's like a whole website dedicated to like the East River and what's in the East River. And there's like tons and tons of stuff. There's like an old pirate ship or something like that down there.
There is. Yeah. I'm reading a book right now. It's I should know the name of it. It's like 2140 or something. And it's about New York City set well after global warming has set in and the water levels in Manhattan have risen. So now cities have become islands. The skyscrapers are islands and there's sky bridges and then boats. Like all the streets are now canals. So it's almost like a futuristic Venice. Yeah. But they talk about there's these kids now going out. It's near the Bronx. There's a pirate ship. It was from the English times. It was a warship that was carrying back a ton of gold. Like they estimate well over $1 billion worth. And it sunk near the Bronx and they tried to retrieve it, the English. But then after America won its independence, like it just kind of got forgotten.
So it's still there.
Well, it's also underneath like the Bronx. Like it used to be ocean. Now it's underneath like a street. So it's not now that in the future that it's underwater, they could go down as like part of a parking lot or something. Like we found it. They're using like a metal detector or something like that. And this old guy who like has all these like 1800s maps is like, there's a pirate ship here with gold. Nobody's ever been able to look for it. But now that there's nobody's living down there, we can do it.
Just go down.
Yeah.
I like that. There was also something I was listening to about the other day. There was one, I can't remember his name and I wish I could, but there was a astronaut who went up and was like, circling, and like one of his things was looking over Russia to see what kind of like silos they had to like make sure that we had them under check and stuff. And this was like early 1900s type thing, or when they 1960s, 1970s.
He was way ahead of his time.
Yeah, he was way ahead of his time. But, you know, like, he was over Russia and looking, and then he also, while he was up there, as he was floating around, he saw, like, a whole bunch of, like, buried or sunken ships, and he was marking all of them as he went. And then when he came back down, he set his life mission to go find all of those. Because he figured it was like a treasure hunt. And
he saw them underwater?
He saw them, like, yeah. So he was, like, you know, up in the atmosphere, and he was looking down, and he saw all these, you know, underwater, just, you know, ships that were, like...
What did he find?
I don't know. I think there's a special on it right now on the History Channel, and that's where I think I heard about it. But it's, like, ongoing.
I think scuba diving is another pretty awesome career path. I mean, I could be a scuba diver.
You just want to get in the water, I think.
Yeah, I could be like a treasure hunter. Mm-hmm. Scuba. I'll be like the Indiana Jones of the sea.
I could see that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like fighting off sharks, like fighting off Nazi sharks and discovering treasure.
We'll hook you up with, what's his name, who made the Titanic, who's just always...
James Cameron.
James Cameron, who's always underwater. And
yeah.
Just...
Well, maybe we're nemesises. Me and Cameron, and we're like fighting to own the trench, you know.
Yeah, I like this narrative you're coming up with.
Nemesis.
Nemesis.
That sounds like an Egyptian Nemesai? Princess or something.
I think
it's Nemesis.
Is it?
It was in what's that movie? Mystery Men. Random.
It really is. I thought you were messing with me.
No, it's from
Nemesis.
It does sound like an old, like, witch.
Yeah.
Nemesis. Giggles, how's it going over there, buddy?
Yeah, what's going on with Giggles?
Now your audio's out. Your audio's out.
What's can you describe for us what Giggles is doing right now?
He's fiddling around with wires. He's fiddling around with his headphones.
How frantic!
He's really frantic.
Look?
He's pulling wires out from nowhere that aren't connected.
He's taking
to anything.
The mic and shoving it in and out of his mouth really fast. I don't know what he's doing.
That's really funny. He's panicking. I can see it in his face.
There's panic.
Yeah, there's panic.
That's too bad. We should just cut our losses.
Did you get it up?
No.
No. Did you get it up?
There. You there?
Oh, there it is. There he is.
There you go.
Welcome back, sir.
All right, it's a little better. I don't know. I was trying to switch cables. I turned off the dryer. Like, I was, you know, well, you know this. Like,
I do.
If something's, like, bugging you with your audio or your video, you got to fix it.
That's right.
You know? Now it's a little bit better, but it was just, like, a constant sort of, like, hiss.
Oof.
You know, it was just driving me crazy. I really couldn't, like, really get down. I was like, if I want to sit with you, you know, you yahoos for 3 hours, I want it to be clean audio.
This
so
is
I got,
true.
You know,
exactly. Thank God it's a 3 hour show. You only need 28 minutes. To
That's true. So you're listening to the Dave and Giggles show. We'll be here for another 2.5 hours to counting down the time. And you could call us because Grizz keeps telling me, send out the number, put out the number, texted me, say the number. Why haven't you said the number? Which is true.
Tell him.
I know. So you can give us a call, which will help us, 718-928-9732. Give us a call. We do have a call coming in, I think, in a couple of minutes from the marine biologist, which should be interesting.
I looked him up accordingly. Yeah. He received an Environmental Excellence Award, and he's a noted authority on submerged aquatic vegetation.
Oh, this is perfect for your future.
Right up your alley.
Cool. Yeah, there he is, I think.
There he is, doctor. Right. His name is Paul A.X. Bologna.
There he is. Hello. Caller, you're on the air. Paul.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Not bad. Let me just put you guys off so I'm not giving so much reverb.
Ah, thank you very much. That means a lot to me. So you could definitely give a little bit more background to yourself, but from what I understand, Paul Bologna, is that how you pronounce the name?
That is the best you can do. Yep.
Excellent. He's a doctor, and he is a director of marine biology and coastal science at the Department of Biology at Montclair State University.
That is correct.
Awesome. So thanks for calling in, first of all. That's really cool of you.
No, I'm glad to hook in with you guys and talk about some topics that are relevant to, you know, where we are today and the kind of future that we want to leave for our kids. And yes, scuba diving and working in the ocean is an awesome job. So every day that I get to be on the water, as opposed to into an office building or something like that, always a good day for me.
So when you got your doctorate, did you spend a lot of time out on the water?
Yeah, so I actually, in terms of my background, I actually started working for the federal government on the Exxon Valdez oil spill up in Alaska.
Wow.
And then I went into graduate school in University of Maine, and then traveled south to Alabama to do my PhD. And so most of my work was outside in the water, affiliated with it for the last 30 years of my life. And it really is. I just can't imagine any other career that provides so much fun and opportunity to be out on the water, and also sort of the last frontier in terms of the planet, which is the ocean, which is, you know, 99% of the place, of the space on the planet where things live, and we don't know hardly anything about it.
Right. This is very true. So have you gone to great depths yet, or is it mostly like you send stuff down to collect your samples and stuff like that?
A lot of the work I do is in pretty shallow water, like less than 10 feet. So I work in a lot of coastal bays here and down in the tropics and elsewhere. I did get a chance back in the early 90s to spend some time in a nuclear sub about 600, 800 feet deep off the coast of Massachusetts. We were actually searching for giant lobsters.
Nice.
Along those lines.
Did you find them?
And we did. And actually, it was a little bit crazy because, you know, it's a Navy sub that we're on. And when we would hear things pinging off in the sonar, usually it was, you know, garbage or a bunch of rocks. And big lobsters always like to hang around. And so we heard this one pinging, and the captain says, "Do you want to check it out?" And of course, yes, we do. And it was this one that was maybe 6 feet long.
Wow. 6 foot long lobster?
Wow.
Yeah, and it put up this giant aggressive posture. So the thing's probably 125 years old. It hasn't seen anything that hasn't kicked its ass in probably, you know, decades. And there's 137-foot nuclear subs bearing down on it, and it just goes, "Come on, I'll take you on."
It's just like, "You what, mate?"
Right. And, you know, the Navy guys are like, "Well, we got a claw. Do you think we could get it?" And I'm like, "You wouldn't want to eat that thing. It's got to be just tough as nails."
Yeah, seriously. How old would you suspect something like that would be?
125, he said.
125?
Yeah, that's what we estimated it based on sort of some growth rate estimates on how often do they molt and get bigger. And as they get older, they don't molt as often. It might be a decade. So it's kind of, it's one part guesswork when they get to really big because you really don't know. There's no, you know, can't slice them in half and count the tree rings, as it were.
Right.
What's the oldest known lobster?
Good question.
I think that there's been some that have been like an aquaria that are, you know, on the range of 100 plus years.
Damn.
That have been, you know, sort of calculated at that point. So we know that they're pretty long. And, you know, the ones that live in the real deep ocean, nobody, you know, you can't catch them in a trap. They're too big.
Right.
So we don't even know necessarily how many are out there or, you know, how old they are.
That's crazy. So how do you spend your summers? You're teaching at Montclair, correct?
That's correct.
And then summers, are you still working for the government, or are you doing your own thing now?
No, well, I do a variety of things. So I do teach classes during the summer, but predominantly I'm out doing a lot of research in the coastal areas of New Jersey. So right now we got some different projects going on. One, we look at jellyfish. Along there, I don't know if you remember last summer, the clinging jellyfish, which is this little guy, maybe about the size of a dime to a quarter, that'll put you in the hospital for a couple of days, that showed up last summer in New Jersey. So we're working on a project trying to understand those things. And then I also work in things called eelgrass beds. And seagrass beds are, you know, they're not sexy, they're not, you know, they're not sea turtles or whales or anything like that, but they're really important in terms of, you know, if you want to catch fish and crabs when you go down the shore and when you're in our areas, that's what they use as habitat. And, you know, I know that we're, you know, going to try to lead into some stuff about climate change. Sure. They're also one of the most effective plants to actually sequester or grab carbon out of the atmosphere, out of the water, and actually sink it away because they bury it in the soil that they live in. And so when we lose them or when they begin to get changed and lost because of human activities, you know, that's a big area that we could suck out a lot of CO2 in terms of our climate. That's not going to happen when we look at a lot of our coastal habitats. The ocean is one of the biggest reservoirs and sinks for this. And that's where, you know, in terms of climate issues, those are a lot of unknowns in terms of what's actually going to happen as we begin to change that. You know, whenever we burn fossil fuels, more carbon goes into the atmosphere. The ocean kind of absorbs and absorbs and absorbs it as much as it can, but that also means that the ocean becomes more acidified. And that's another challenge for all the, you know, the plants and animals and the organisms that live there. It's one of the side effects of climate change is ocean acidification. And those link into things like, you know, coral reef loss and a whole variety of other programs and problems. Like, you know, if you love oysters and clams, well, it's hard for them to actually make their shell when it's more acidified. So these are, you know, problems in terms of our food that we actually harvest out of the ocean. So there's a lot of linkages that,
sure,
you know, sort of our change in climate are out there.
Definitely.
Could I also have a question about, so you started your career cleaning up the Valdez spill in Alaska. And I feel times, like, these things happen and they're in the news for a while, and then the cleanup starts to happen and they kind of fall out. So could you just remind